Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Coast to Coast Live coming at you. Sunday evening here, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. I am Joey Powell. With me, as always, Sherelle McMillan, Sean Moran, here to talk a little Tar Heels basketball, recruiting, and who knows what else we might get into tonight. Fellas, big weekend for UNC. I know that the score might not have been what folks may have expected, but Tar Heels got out of the Smith Center with a win 79-70 over NC State. In a game that could have gone a couple of different ways, I believe. But North Carolina does win. Want to give a special shout-out to Johnny T-Shirt for sponsoring the show, to Congruity for sponsoring the show, and to everybody who is already in the live chat. And if you're watching us later on, just make sure you subscribe, rate, and review us. We appreciate it. Guys, let's talk about the game at the Smith Center on Saturday. Tar Heels 79, NC State 70. I'll do some quick stat highlights. And then I want to get into kind of a little more holistic analysis of what this game might mean as far as the rest of the season or any trends that we've seen from the squad. Immediately, first thing that jumps out at me is the Tar Heels had 8 players to score, 9 guys log minutes. Cormac Ryan did foul out, but I think he did a great job defending DJ Horn in the second half. Outside of, you thought that DJ Horn was probably going to be the problem for North Carolina, and you go and look, and they also gave up 22 to Jaden Taylor, who's their first guy off the bench. And that's not something that we've seen this North Carolina team allow most of the year. Free throw shooting, I think, was a big thing for the Tar Heels. They made 23 of 27. Only allowed NC State to shoot 16 of them. The Heels ended up finishing 47% from the field for the game, 38% from the field, but NC State finished 47% from the field, and at one point that was up almost to 70, I believe, in the first half. So things did kind of level off in the second half. NC State really struggled to get going from the field. I believe they were, they only made 6 field goals in the second half, but just another grinded out effort by this Tar Heels team. Sherelle, I'm going to come to you first. Tar Heels win the game. I think there's plenty of things to be good about. It's their 4th straight win now after dropping 3 out of 5 at one point. But I think there may still be some stuff here that may feel like a bee in a bonnet for old school Carolina fans. I want to come to you and see how do you feel about North Carolina coming out of that victory on Saturday.
Yeah, the first thing is it's the time of year where it doesn't really matter what it looks like. The time for improving and changing and all that stuff is mostly over. There can be, I guess, some incremental change from teams, but at this point, the wonderful saying, you kind of are what you are. And I think North Carolina has shown that it does have a propensity to, I don't want to say play down to the level of its competition, but there's certainly times throughout the game where it does do that. Maybe not for the full 40 minutes, but there are certain times where Hubert Davis has said it over and over, their attention and focus and detail and all those things are lacking. I don't think it's a what we talked about, his first 2 years, an energy, effort, or toughness issue. It's more of a focus issue, and maybe to some degree, kind of a I don't want to say mental toughness, but close to that. Because as we've said on here over and over, it's very, very easy to get pumped up after a dunk. It's very hard to fight through a screen or, you know, have the right angle over and over and over again. That's what mental toughness is. And I think at times that has been kind of iffy, but then they usually kind of jerk it back to the other side and are able to, you know, be tough and close out some of these games, even though it doesn't look pretty. So I think my overall theme would just be like, they're winning. I know it doesn't look great. I know there are some glaring red flags, but, you know, at this point of the year, it's all about whether you win or not.
Sean, I want to ask you a similar question about the game, but I think one of the biggest things that jumped off the film was Hubert Davis's adjustment at halftime on DJ Horn, in a sense that they stopped focusing on the big out of the high pick and roll and started putting more of their emphasis on the guard, which I think held Horn to 4 points in the second half. Was that adjustment the difference of the game, or was this just, I guess, more of a scenario where North Carolina has a more talented team, NC State really doesn't have anything to play for, and Watertown is level?
Maybe probably meet in the middle. I think you knew they were going to have to adjust going into the second half, especially given how they ended the first half. So I think on the guards was a big focus point. Also rotations, they definitely looked a little slow and out of place, which was allowing NC State to get pretty comfortable and confident in the first half. So I think one, making those adjustments early on defensively. You know, two, I thought offensively when they got it up to 36-30, that could have been a turning point where, hey, they're gonna blow them out. Obviously it went the other way. But then to get down 10 early, and then by, you know, really the first time out, so 4 minutes, you're pretty much tied back up, and then halfway through you're up 10. So really a 18-20 point swing in that quick a time. So I think also was the offense starting to execute, and I know we'll talk about Elliot Cadeau, but as these games get down into crunch time, and especially in March where it's lose and go home, you're gonna have to take him out at times just for rest and maybe fouls in some defensive situations, but you need him in there to get the ball running. And, you know, no matter what, I'm always a big believer that a good offense beats a good defense, and UNC can't go long scoring, you know, long stretches without scoring the ball. And he's really the key to, you know, pushing the tempo and getting things done.
Sean, what you said is one of the reasons I'm frightened of Kentucky. If I was anyone in the country, like, you don't know if you're going to get, you know, JV Pernell Sweat Kentucky, or you're going to get like Cleveland Cavaliers Kentucky. You just never know. But that's to your point about offense beating defense. And like, they're, I think, the best offensive team in the country, by far the most talent. But to that point, you were talking about State and kind of regression and stuff. They're not a good shooting team, which is the irony of the whole thing. Entering the game, they were 14th in conference play in an effective field goal percentage, and they were 12th in conference play in 2-point percentage from the field. So they're not a good shooting team, and they have shown that over and over. And so I think the discussion has to be, it's not, I think we've gotten to a point where it's like, oh, they just hit tough shots. Oh, they just hit tough shots. Yeah, Syracuse hit tough shots. But then we said the same thing after Clemson, and we said the same thing after another game. After 6, 7, 8 games, if guys are hitting tough shots, maybe the shots just aren't that tough. Or maybe you need to do something to change your philosophy. I don't think it's a philosophy issue with Hubert Davis. I do think it's what we talked about earlier, those details and everything. But just curious what y'all think about that, because it seems like we're saying the same thing, like, oh, they just hit tough shots, but it's becoming a trend. Like, it's not just that other people see the Carolina uniform and go, you know, thermonuclear or anything. I don't think, at least.
I feel that's how over the years it has traditionally been, and it was probably that, you know, 6 to 8 game stretch at the beginning of the ACC where it flipped, and all of a sudden UNC was locking people down, and now it's back. I don't want to say the norm, but you know, their defense is still playing well and better than most people expected. But I think whether it's the guards or just not as, you know, not as crisp in terms of execution, it's gotten where teams can, I think, if they're moving the ball quickly, UNC and utilizing the pick and roll effectively, they can get UNC out of position and get good looks, and once again get confidence from that.
Yeah, I last thing, Joey, now as you go, I watched the Pittsburgh game this morning from, I think it was January 6th or January 7th or something, and I don't know, I was in my mind, I'm like, oh man, they played great defense that game. There's just dudes missing wide open threes. Like Blake Henson had a wide open three go in and out. One of the Frederico, I think, apologies if I'm missing up their name, one of the brothers had a three that just went down. Carrington had at least two threes where there was nobody within 7 or 8 feet of him, and he missed. So I do think it is some regression, and that we can look back now at that team game stretch and say, yeah, they were playing good defense, but also teams were just missing a lot of like wide open shots.
What's crazy is North Carolina is still 26th in adjusted offensive efficiency, and they're sixth in defensive efficiency, which blows my mind. I mean, I did not expect this team to be that good defensively from the metrics. And to your point, Shrell, yeah, against NC State, I don't feel like they were all really well guarded shots. I think NC State was doing a really good job of getting their guys open. I think there were two times that I remember that they got offensive rebounds that turned into 3-point buckets for their perimeter shooters. And that's 6 points. When you're talking about an 8-point halftime deficit, that matters. And so it is weird that North Carolina still looks this good on paper. But to your point, Sherelle, what we're seeing right now with our eyes and how they've played around the perimeter over the stretch of an entire game doesn't seem as good as maybe what's in our head. But who knows? Maybe all these games are, you know, kind of more regression to the mean, like maybe the Pitt game was the aberration, you know? Go ahead, Sean.
You know, there was less overall possessions in this NC State game versus Clemson, but being down 7 points, you don't want to be down 7 points at home, but versus double figures. Once they get it, they cut it, got it back to even in 4 minutes. So it wasn't like Clemson, or even go back 3 years to the Pittsburgh game that everybody thought they had to win, and you're down big, and it just takes so much energy to even get close to tying it. And then when you do, you kind of lose sales. So even though there was less possessions, you never at the time, you never really felt, hey, this is getting away, because it still felt fairly loose in terms of how both teams were playing versus maybe a Clemson or a UVA that will just work clock and box out if they are getting rebounds, and every possession just becomes a little more painful. So once again, I think that's the level of play that NC State was at. So it wasn't a surprise that they were able to cut it pretty quickly.
And I think NC State would have loved to have run with North Carolina. I mean, for the most part, they were okay with an up and down tempo, but they just weren't able to convert in the second half. And I think part of that was adjustments, but it also maybe there is something to that visitors rim that, you know, North Carolina shoots on first. Who knows? Because I feel like there was another game this year where it was the exact same. Two players I want to talk about in particular. Sean, you mentioned Elliot Cadeau a second ago. We'll go ahead and start there. His stat line was absolutely gaudy for a freshman point guard. And, you know, no, he's not putting up, you know, Dillingham-type numbers and, you know, stupid stuff like that. But the efficiency is what I'm looking at. 15 points on 5-for-7 field goal shooting, 1-for-1 from three, which the one that he took was almost like a, okay, you're going to dare me, I'm going to jar it. Missed only one free throw, because his free throws have been consistently getting better over the last 3 months. 4 rebounds, 7 assists, and only 2 turnovers. And the big one to me is he only had 1 personal foul in a game where the referees have shown it doesn't matter what they call, how they call the game in the first half. We're going to blow our whistles in the second half so that everybody gets to see us and we get to, you know, make sure our striped jerseys are on TV. That one foul, I don't know if it was because he was playing better defense or if he's just learned when and where he can grab. All that to say, just a really great performance from Cadeau. This team is so much more efficient when he's in the game, and he's starting to show just some emotion, which is so fun to see out of a freshman point guard at North Carolina. Sean, is this more of what you expected from Elliott Kadare, or did you think it would be even less of this sort of stat line?
Well, I think the 15 points is definitely nice. To me, it was the 7 assists as well. But I think, once again, from a quickness perspective, it's hard for anybody to stay in front of him one-on-one. I think when a game where RJ was struggling to get open looks, which, you know, we've seen it, obviously not in Miami, but two of the past three with UVA, teams are going to continue to key on him, and it's going to be important for Kadare to step up. I love the three-pointer that he hit. He, you know, kind of had it in rhythm, and it looked good when he did shoot it. But to me, one of my favorite plays was when he caught it on the left wing, kind of jab left and just accelerated to the right side, because he did have a mismatch and blew by the defender and got a layup. And then you could see him kind of posturing a little bit afterwards. So I think for him, it's going to continue to be aggressive, continue to pick your spots. You know, he has that first step that nobody else does. So once again, that when they got it back and they're kind of hovering, I really wanted him back in the game, because I knew this is the time the offense needs to push it and they need to build a lead versus trying to focus on defense. And once again, just with how he's able to push the ball, that pass he had to Ingram in the first half that got up to the 36-30 was beautiful. I probably thought there'd be a little more of those just in general, but you know, even if they can get one or two of those easy baskets per game. So this was I think his best game from an offensive efficiency rating. It was tied for first, but number one in, I'd say, big games or power five teams. So is he going to be able to do that every game? No. Once again, we'll see. Notre Dame, good defensive team, and how Duke will play him. But once again, I think from a confidence standpoint, it is big getting into March, knowing what he can do, especially if RJ or others aren't at, you know, playing at an A plus level.
I get the feeling there's going to be a game sometime in the next few weeks before the season is over, where he goes off for about 20 or 25, just because he's going to start spamming that drive to the basket, and then other teams are going to continue to sag off. And, you know, he's proven if he wants to get you, he can get you, full stop. Sherrell, you covered Elliott Kadare's recruitment really, really deeply, and you were able to see all of this. Now that we're sitting here in March, you know, you better than anybody else knows kind of the level of expectation that a point guard at North Carolina comes in with. You understand how mercurial that spot can be for a guy. Now that we've seen, you know, say 75-80% of the season with Elliott Kadare at the helm, how do you rate that? Is he kind of met your expectations? Has he exceeded them? Or has it still kind of, do you still think it's a TBD with this last quarter of the season remaining?
Yeah, I'll say a TBD, only because I think at the beginning, his season has definitely ebbed and flowed. I mean, there were moments earlier in the season, you take Tennessee, for example, where you were like, you thought, okay, the train is leaving, you know, get on board now while you still can. But then there were some not so stellar games in between there, you know, during that stretch for January, where they won those 10 games. You know, if you go back and look at it, he wasn't particularly great really during all of January. And then you could slowly start to see things turn around. And the reason I'll say TBD is because he hasn't quite met them, but he's gotten better pretty much since that time, especially on the defensive end. I think if you go back and look at his defensive performance, say in December and January, it's going to look a lot different from some of the tape he's put out in the last 2 weeks. Just much better, moving his feet better, doing a better job of staying in front. And like you said, Joey, now doing a better job of not fouling. Before, you know, he was good for 3-4 fouls per game, and he was often sitting and in foul trouble. And that sets off a chain reaction, because what happens is RJ Davis has to go on the ball. RJ Davis is by far, obviously, your best scorer. So when he is not freed up to be a scorer, that hurts everything. And then he has to expend more energy to, you know, kind of get everybody in the right place. And it's a spiral effect for the entire offense and defense. So now that he's able to stay in games and not have much foul trouble, I think it's helped RJ Davis a ton. And the goal, I think, and the reason that we've all said that Kadare was the X factor, is because he's the only one on the team who can take other players on the team and make what they already do good better. That he's the one person who can like take everybody else to the next level. That's why he's so important. And I think we're seeing it, and I'll give it a TBD just because, like you said, I still think there's like a Cadeau game coming. I don't know when it's going to be, but I think there's like a, you know, 18.8 assists, one turnover, four rebounds, two steals type game coming. He's got it in him. Yep. He's been close. So I'll say TBD. The other thing I did wanted to note on him, look at his free throws since the Florida State game. He's 23 of 29 over the last, I think it's seven games. So another area of improvement. At the beginning of the season, I think he was, you know, in the 50s. His season average now is still in the 60s, but the last, you know, seven games, like I said, 23 of 29. So he's made a lot of progress there too. So you're seeing
that also. That's also the difference of like 3 or 4 points a game, right? And that's where when you get to games where maybe your offense is either tired or slagging, you know, dragging out, and you're not able to get the efficiency that you're looking for, 3 or 4 points matters. And when you're talking about a guy who hasn't shot particularly well from the perimeter, seeing the ball go in the net matters. Somebody else that had an amazing game on Saturday, and it didn't feel like it. And this takes me back to I've used the George Lynch comp on here before. But Harrison Ingram reminds me a lot of George Lynch, especially in a game like the one against NC State, because he absolutely dominated the stat line and you didn't feel like it. Yeah, if you look at his rebound total, he had 6 boards for the game, but I feel like they were really timely. Made all of his free throws, which he has not done a lot this year. 2 of 5 from behind the arc, 8 of 14 from the field, 22 points, and no turnovers. And I look at that kind of stat for a guy that's never played in these sorts of rivalry games. And, you know, he made the comment after the game, you know, he doesn't understand why they hate him. That's what helps. But just seeing him be able to plug into a rivalry and do the things that he wanted to do, just I feel like we saw a different level from Harrison Ingram against NC State. Sherrill, what was your takeaway from seeing Ingram not only – show a little spring that we hadn't seen before, but just had a little bit of a little bit of want to, and maybe he was up for the sniping that was going on yesterday between both squads.
It's amazing to me. You can tell when a guy has struggled from, you know, the field, especially in shooting. You can tell when they took an extra day or some extra time and just put up a whole bunch of shots, because it's like, we use the training camp analogy during the bye week, like you get back to fundamentals. But I think that's really what he did, because if you look at his shot from a couple of games ago and you look at it, the ones from Saturday, they were much more in rhythm. They were calmer. They were more relaxed. They didn't seem rushed. It just seemed like he was comfortable taking them. And I think that's muscle memory. That's all the work in the gym that you're seeing come to fruition. That is amazing to me. So I think that's part of the reason he was probably up for the game. He probably had a feeling that he was going to play well, because it seems like he put in a lot of extra work. I think maybe he talked about it a little bit in the post game. That's definitely part of it. And then, State does hate Carolina. Like, that is pretty obvious. And I think it's been passed on to him. I wouldn't be surprised if Roy Williams talked to the team. I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. They might not want that out, but I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. And Hubert Davis conveyed the message of like, hey, you know, these guys, you need to beat them. Yes, you need to do what you always do and prepare for every game the same. But this one's a little different. And the Smith Center feels a little different. It's sold out. It's on a Saturday afternoon. And the season in those type of games, Ingram has really played well. If you go back and look, you know, the Duke game, some of the higher profile matchups, he's really been engaged. The Tennessee game came out, hit three or four threes in the first half. So it's kind of his thing, I think. As the moment gets bigger, so does he.
And he didn't have a lot of those opportunities when he was out in Palo Alto. I think, that's not me besmirching the Stanford program or what was the Pac-12. Just they hadn't had that sort of marquee opportunity that he's had since he's been in Chapel Hill. Sean, I want to ask you to speak specifically about when you have a player as versatile as Ingram is, where he's able to guard a 3 or a 4 or even a 5, depending on who that 5 man is, how much better does that make North Carolina as far as their ability to take their opponent out of what that opponent wants to do offensively?
Well, I think you go back a few years and it was always the the four that seemed to be, I don't want to call it the weakness, but that seemed to be where UNC could struggle in terms of playing the traditional two big set. And I think having a guy that can be that hybrid, whether it's the 4-3, 3-4, but even slot up a little bit in certain situations, I think just makes a world of difference, because it doesn't allow matchup problems on the defensive end. But at the same time, you see what he's able to do on the offensive end when he does get some of those mismatches, or when he is able to free himself for a shot. So I think his versatility is huge. As Sherrell was saying, you know, he's come to play in big games, and even when he has struggled, he's come up with timely rebound, steal, hit, you know, big shot. But he's going to be not the key, but certainly one of the keys in terms of how far do they go in March. You know, I think you can, with him and Cormac Ryan, when they let it go from three, you can usually tell what's going to happen as soon as they're in the air, in terms of for Ingram, you know, was it rushed, or did he get his base set? For Ryan, you know, did he just take a little bit longer? Did he get good elevation? So those two guys are really going to be the keys in terms of everything. But I think for Ingram, I love watching all those replays. He has the biggest smile on his face pretty much, you know, every time, which is fun to watch. But you also know that, especially Diarra, because I remember it from the first game, those guys were talking a ton, and I think he also enjoys that aspect of it as well. So, you know, that was probably kind of the perfect game for him, playing at home, but also getting a lot from both sides. So once again, I think if he can be, not expecting him to shoot like that every game, but if he can, I think he needs to be in that 13 to 17 point range at a minimum, at a good efficiency for UNC to reach what we're hoping they can reach.
Sitting here thinking about both of the players that we've spent some time on tonight, that Ingram play that Cadeau play where Ingram and Cormac both like rushed up to him after he hit that crazy layup. Just the looks on their faces, to your point, Sean, was really, really fun to see, because that was three kids who were absolutely just losing themselves in the game, really enjoying being a part of winning and being a part of each other's success. And that's something Hubert Davis has talked about a lot. Y'all, I'm going to ask you to forgive me. I'm still struggling with my voice. I feel a lot better. Turned out that I had COVID-26 this past week, but yeah, that's what's got me sounding like Lou Rawls, but I do feel a little bit better. Appreciate you guys being patient with the voice. Quickly, before we take a break, I do want to take a quick look at Notre Dame coming to town for senior night. This is a team that I know they have been down all year, but Notre Dame has absolutely found something these last couple of weeks. And I think that Micah Shrewsbury is a good coach. I think that there's a chance they could end up being better than maybe their record shows. But you know, they beat Wake Forest, and that's a Wake Forest team that 2 weeks ago everybody felt like could play their way into the tournament. They beat Clemson yesterday. So I mean, this is a team that for whatever reason and however they found it, they're starting to figure some things out. I do realize it is at home and it is senior night and all that stuff, but this Notre Dame team that has won, as I'm looking at it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is great radio.
Five
out of the last six, and that's nothing to kind of nod your head about. So, I would also point out that maybe, you know, a team like that coming in playing free with Burton, you know, having a chance to get the ball in his hands, not exactly something to overlook. Sean, why am I overthinking things here?
Well, I just love the fact that Calvin Booth's son is on this team.
Man, y'all are old.
you mean Nate Leszewski and JJ Starling and Dane Goodwin are all gone? Are they really all gone for real this time? Are we sure?
I mean, that's the other crazy, because I think you get so used to who has been at Notre Dame. Coach Bray had, you know, kind of a certain type of player and some talented teams. Obviously it fell off last year, but I mean, I think you can look just from an overseas perspective, and the Notre Dame guys always do well if they're not in the NBA. So I think obviously this was a complete readjustment. The team is pretty young. They're starting to figure it out. they're one of the teams that has hurt the ACC in terms of some bad early season losses, a pretty poor ranking. So anytime they are getting wins, it's a bad, you know, a bad loss for the opposing teams. But they are playing well. They're young with a lot of freshmen and sophomores. And I think this is a team that's going to be, they're going to try to play it slow, grind it out, keep it close, and hope to steal something. So I think this is a game, obviously senior night. But I think UNC, they can't get beat by Duke again before and after the game like they did last time. And I think trying to take care of business early, look for Armando down low. This is the type of team that he should have success with if he can be aggressive on the boards. And I think if they're crisp, both offensively and defensively, we shouldn't have to worry about it. But we have said that going into the Georgia Tech and other games. So this is a game they need to focus on. It's at home. But Notre Dame, with their young, young players, I think will be good. We'll be back to what they were in no time. But hopefully this time Carolina can take business early, and then we can focus on Duke afterwards.
Sherelle, I did confirm that Luke Herangode is not walking out of that tunnel on Tuesday night for the Irish. Any thoughts that you might have, Sherelle? Again, I'm a Shrewsbury fan. I think he could do some things there if he gets the time to do it. Maybe not start Tuesday night.
Yeah, I think for North Carolina, it really is just all about their defense, like it always is almost. Just another segment called reading. Conference-only numbers. Notre Dame is last in offensive efficiency. They are last in effective field goal percentage. They're last in turnover percentage. They're last in block percentage. They're 14th in two-point percentage. They're 11th in three-point percentage. And they don't get to the free throw line a lot. So,
but what are they number two in?
Yeah, but they're number two behind North Carolina in conference-only defensive efficiency. So it's just like a situation where they can't let Notre Dame get comfortable. They have to be kind of on 100 from the start, so to speak. All gas, no brakes, like Hubert Davis likes to say, on the defensive end. And if they do that, then everything else should take care of itself. Because Notre Dame is not a team they shouldn't be a team who comes out and hits 8 of 12 from 3 in the first half like the last two opponents have. But Carolina has to be a part of that because they are college players. And if you let them get comfortable, especially Burton, then, yeah, that could happen. But I think as long as they have attention to detail on the defensive end, then everything else will take care of itself. And I agree with Sean. This is kind of one of those Armando Bacot games where you wouldn't be surprised if he ends up with 23 and 11 or 23 and 12, something like that.
Just looking at the KenPom numbers, around a 16-point spread. So you would hope, but once again, crazier things have happened. But I think it is Notre Dame probably had one of the best ACC weeks this past week. I know both games were at home, but beating both Wake and Clemson back to back, that would have to put them probably in a top five for just individual weeks that teams have had. So you don't want to look past anybody, as we said, one game at a time with this team. And they've done, I know there's games that we wish they could get back, but at the end of the day, they have three losses, which if we went back to our preseason predictions, I don't think I had that, was probably expecting a little bit more. And you can go back to 2019 had two losses, but the 2017 and 2016 teams had four. I think we can argue about the merits of the ACC, but it's still been a heck of a season because for the most part, they have been able to go one game at a time.
And how crazy this is a chance. I was just going to say it's a chance for the team to show growth too, Joey. Like, they beat Duke on it, so they lose to Georgia Tech on a Tuesday. They come back, they beat Duke in an emotional game. They come out, as flat as you can possibly be against Clemson, lose that game. They rebound, they go to Miami, they win a tough game there. They come out, I don't want to say flat, but just not as enthusiastic defensively, and lose to Syracuse. So this is the same situation where you beat your rival in an emotional game. Now can you show the maturity and growth from last month and show that you learned from those mistakes and come out to beat a team that you're more talented than and that you should beat at home?
Yeah, I think the thing that kind of gets me is you go back and look at like Sean said this past week, Notre Dame just beat two teams that were flirting with the double bye, right? You know, and now we're, you know, sitting here discussing it. North Carolina has clinched at least a double bye and at least second place in the league if they win against Notre Dame. They have clinched a double bye, but they'll clinch at least second for the ACC regular season standings. Guys, the only other thing I could think of before Tuesday night is just reminding folks, if you're planning on being in the game, show up early. Remember, this is not the old Roy Williams type senior day where he allows the seniors to speak afterwards. I think they do most of the honoring before the game. That's Hubert Davis's choice. So if you're going to be there, it's a Tuesday night, go ahead and get your butts in your seats if you're going to go. I just hate for anybody who's listening to the show to miss out on what they expect to see. And you know, we all know that traffic can also be booty on a weekday night going into the Smith Center. One of the things I think was rather impressive about North Carolina's win against NC State was they were consistent in the second half at not letting NC State get what they wanted offensively. What I would have loved to have seen was if North Carolina would have stretched the lead out and allow NC State to go ahead and go to Johnny T-shirt and get some gear, right? If they would have ended the game a little earlier and put it out of reach, NC State could have gotten up to Franklin Street and then gotten back and been able to get their pick of UNC gear. You know, we talked about the baseball digs that are officially available at Johnny T-shirt. I am not a fan of the March team bench shirts that the teams wear once tournament starts. I think those are trash, basura, for our Spanish friends. And not to say anything negative about Johnny T-shirt, but Johnny T-shirt has those, right? That's just my opinion. I don't like them, but you may like them. And whether you like things, you know, potato, patata, Johnny T-shirt's going to be able to help you out. So go ahead and go to Johnny T-shirt. See them, get what you need. They will have these shirts in stock soon. If they don't have them already, forgive me for not checking before the show, but they'll take care of you. And just like anything else, they have the very best selection, the very best prices, and the very best customer service that you're going to find. Locally owned, alumni operated, right there on East Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. Go see them. Johnny T-shirt, we appreciate them. Let the national guys drop their ads in here. We'll come back for the second half of the show. Talk with some other stuff that might be of interest to our viewers and listeners here. You're listening to and or watching the Coast to Coast podcast here on InSouthCarolina.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right. Thank y'all for being here. We appreciate everybody who's been in the chat. And I want to give a big point to the passer to Mr. McMillan for checking and confirming that Johnny T-shirt does have the blank blank energy shirts that are now available, the March official team t-shirts that Nike puts out. So go pick yours up if you are so inclined. Guys, something I want to share. is that as of this year, I'm a voter for the U.S. Basketball Writers Association. And you're like, hey, Joey, you're not a writer. And I say, nay, nay, you don't have to be a writer. You can just be a member of the media to do so. And luckily, as host of this show here on Inside Carolina, not only do I get to hang out with you fine folks, but I get to vote for the USBWA. So what I thought I would do tonight is share my votes for their three All-American teams. And I want to couch this. I figure this would probably be a pretty good discussion for folks in the live chat to tell me how terrible my selections were. You guys can tell me how terrible my selections were. But I do want to couch this and give it some context first. The way the teams are asked, or where they send the ballots to you, are they say, hey, select 15. You know, over the course of the year, they'll release, like, these are our, you know, last 40 or so nominees, or 25 or whoever it is, nominees for our U.S. Basketball Writers Association, USBWA, All-American Squad. So they sent the ballots out last week, and I did complete mine. So what I'll do is, again, you don't vote for which team you put them on. You just select 15, regardless of position, and they do say you have to pick at least one of them. So I'm going to give you guys my list. They're alphabetical, so bear with me. And I'll allow you guys to shoot holes in it, tell me it's bad or whatever. And I'm just going to read them off. Johnny Broome from Auburn, RJ Davis from North Carolina, Hunter Dickinson of Kansas, Zach Edey from Purdue, Kyle Filipowski from Duke, if no other reason, the fact that he came back from the dead in just a week and was able to perform in two games last week. You got to admire, that's All-American type comeback material. Dalton Knecht from Tennessee, Tyler Kulick from Marquette, Jaden Ledee from San Diego State, which not a lot of people have heard about. I've seen him twice this year. I think he's a real deal. I think he would be a good player in any you know, high major conference. Caleb Love, Tristan Newton from UConn, Antonio Reeves at Kentucky, Hunter Salas, Baylor Shireman, Mark Sears, and Jamal Shedd. So I'm going to throw those out there. And guys, there's a couple I'll share with you that I was struggling with, that whether to leave on or leave off. I didn't put Armando Bacot on it. That hurts my heart. But I do think, you know, he's, I don't know that he's had one of the top 15 years in the league. I think he's been great for this North Carolina team, but statistically, which is usually what you're looking at, I don't think he's there. I think Salas probably makes me feel worse about that, and I'm trying not to live in the moment based on how things went for them against Notre Dame this week. But having seen that, having seen what he's put together the whole year, I like his game. A lot of the other ones I think are fairly easy. It pained me to put Baylor Shireman on there, and that's some old scar tissue from Creighton, a Creighton game 13 years ago. But I think a lot of the other ones are pretty easy as far as, you know, yeah, they're a top 15 player. I struggled with not including LJ Cryer from Houston. I think he's a strong player. I think he's probably one of the better defensive players in the year, in my opinion. And you know, Janelle Davis from Florida Atlantic, I don't know that he's had the season that he had last year. But anyway, that's my 15. Guys, who did I leave off? Who did I omit? Who's scratching your head? I'm already seeing some folks in the chat giving me some grief. So love it. Love the engagement. Sherelle, I'll go to you first. What did I butcher?
I think Darren Holmes from Dayton probably merits consideration. I mean, the thing with all these lists is that I'm not going to rip it on anybody for like putting somebody on there who they think should be on there, as long as the position is defensible. I think with ACC Player of the Year voting and all that stuff coming up, you know, there's going to be a random person who wants attention who votes some random person. But as long as you can defend it and say, this is what I was thinking, this is why I was thinking it, then I have no issue with it. I probably would have had Kalkbrenner probably on there too from Creighton. It's crazy as it sounds. I know people are going to get on me. I actually kind of like watching Creighton. Like, they're a fun team. Like, they have three players I really, really enjoy in Alexander, Shireman, and Kalkbrenner. Excuse me. So I kind of like Creighton. I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Kalkbrenner was not an option, by the way.
Really? That's surprising.
He was not an option on the list.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, no issue. I think I'm really curious how, if you would have done it like his first, second, third team, how you would have done it. Maybe that's a question we can throw back at you after Sean gives his thoughts. Like, if you had to make a first team right now, what would it be based upon the 15 that you pick?
That's fair. I think I could do that. Sean, give me your feedback, man. Who did I miss? What did I butcher? If you had the same vote, who would you have swapped out?
I thought it was pretty good overall, especially going through 15 and having to go coast to coast with the list, getting some West Coast love.
See what you did
out
there.
You know, Jaden Ledee, once again, he played great last year in the tournament and has had a strong season. And you look at, you know, the guy, he's 24 years old. And I remember this is going back, you know, eight, 9 years where he was at the USA basketball camps. He was one of the top rising, you know, top freshmen, top rising sophomores in the country. And, you know, just kind of a case of a kid being probably ranked too high, more from his physicality versus his skill set. And, but at the end of the day, luckily was able to find a program where he fit and was able to excel, towards the back end. So just nice to see that story. So many times you see kids that are highly ranked just completely fall off the map in those situations. But you know, I don't know, not real great content, but I wouldn't kind of bring up, you know, many other players, but I think it would go to who, you know, if you had to put your first team, who would it be right now out of curiosity?
Yeah. Well, and so also I want to point out, I left Terrence Shannon off the list too. Cause Terrence Shannon, not on my list. read between the lines there. I think if I had to put five, I'd probably go, and I hate, you know, I would love to see RJ Davis get play. I think you can make a case for RJ Davis for player of the year because he's not the focus of the offense that Zach Edey is. He's also 6'0", 100-0, doing this against what I think is a better league. I think the ACC is better than the Big Ten is this year. But my first team All-Americans, I would say Dalton Knecht, Tyler Kulik, Zach Edey, Caleb Love, and RJ Davis. Those would probably be my first five. And I realize I'm leaving a couple of guys that are amazing scorers and stuff off of there. But that if you're telling me right now, I got to give you a first five. That's probably my first five.
The one guy, maybe not first team, but did you have Mark Sears from Alabama?
Yes, I did not have him first team, okay. But he was on my 15.
All right, he was the one guy that I didn't think I heard, but with what he's been doing lately, and just on a side note, I mean, even watching there's a lot of good basketball yesterday, but the Alabama,
yeah, there was.
Tennessee game, you look at all those top players and they all are up transfers that came from low major to mid major schools in the last 2 years, and those are the best guys in some of the top SEC teams. So
like, man, Dalton Knecht, like that conference and his team last year, so bad, like awful. They were one of the worst teams in one of the worst conferences, and that's just one thing with the portal you can't really adjust for. You know, there could be a player who comes from low major, comes to a school like Carolina, and it just doesn't work out. Or there can be a player like Dalton Knecht who comes from a low major, goes to Tennessee, and just sets the world on fire. It's I don't think there's a science to it. You don't really know until they get there. And honestly, when, you know, North Carolina called Knecht once or twice, and it kind of became apparent that it wasn't going to happen. But when me and Ben started, like, Ben Sherman, editor-in-chief of Inside Carolina, for those who don't know. But when we started, like, looking through, you know, all his data, Sean, too, all his data in KenPom and Bartorvik, and looking at game film, it was like, yeah, but this is the, you know, the Big Sky. Can this really translate into the SEC or the ACC or the Big 12? And you don't know until it happens. So as, you know, the portal starts to, you know, I guess we'll talk about that at some point, but with that opening in a couple of weeks, just keep an open mind. I don't mean to be redundant, but arguably the best player on the country's best team is a transfer from East Carolina. Like, think about that. So just, you know, when different guys are getting attention from different schools, try to have an open mind, just because, to Sean's point, Cam Spencer, where did he come from? I don't even remember.
That's
Loyola.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so,
again,
I mean,
like, he was, he was not on anybody's radar as a potential difference maker when he plugged into that roster.
Right, right. So, I mean, Dalton Knecht, Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer, the list goes on and on of guys from that mid-major level, even low-major level, who've come and made a huge difference from teams. So that's my way to push it forward into portal talk. If we decide to go there, like, just keep it up in mind. I know I said that all last year, but please just keep it up in mind.
Well, thanks for humoring me, guys. That was I did think it was good. You know, that being the first time I'd had a chance to vote for one of these. The other thing, yeah, they ask you to vote for women too. I did that one. And they ask you who your rank three for player of the year. I don't mind saying, I don't mind saying I did put RJ Davis first, but Zach Edey second. And then they also ask you to rank newcomer of the year, which I think is an interesting topic too. I put Jacoby Walter for Baylor first, Reed Shepard from Kentucky second, and as much as it may pain some of I see subscribers, I put Jared McCain third, just because if you consider what he's done in that league this year when they needed it from him, he's picked up time when Tyrese Proctor's been hurt. He's been very steady. I mean, he scored 35 or whatever it was at Florida State a couple of weeks ago. Those are my three for National Freshman of the Year.
So was it freshman or was it newcomer?
It says freshman. Sorry. Yeah, it's okay. Freshman of the Year.
I'm curious to see how organizations adapt to that. Like, are you going to start giving Dalton, like, newcomer of the year in the SEC?
Yeah, well, it's the Wayman Tisdale Award, which should be who plays the best jazz bass, but unfortunately, that's not the case there. Guys, I do want to make a couple of recruiting notes before we get out of here today. Sherelle, I know that UNC had a surprise visitor, and then one not so surprise visitor at the NC State game.
Yeah, season ticket holder Drake Powell was there on Saturday. I don't think he's going to be able to make the game Tuesday because I think they have a playoff game on Tuesday. So they're in the third round now of the North Carolina High School Athletic Association playoffs. They were played on Saturday. I think they won by like 40 or something. So weren't really challenged. I don't think they'll be challenged until they get into the regional semifinals. Farmville Central is like a state powerhouse, and there's a chance that they're going to play them. So that's something to watch. And then Ian Jackson was back in the Smith Center for the first time since his official visit back in November. This is his third overall trip to UNC. So his official visit as a junior, he was at, I think, the Georgia Tech game where UNC won big. And then he was here there in the fall. And then again, yesterday, didn't know that one was coming. Got a text at like, well, the game was at 4. Got a text at like 2:58. It was like, hey, surprise visitor. Ian Jackson. So I think that will help maybe dissuade some of the stuff that's been out there for him for some time. His OTE season is over, so him and Drake are going to hit the national, I guess, all-star game circuit. They're both in the McDonald's game. They're both in the Iverson Classic, and then I think each of them has one other one that they're playing in.
Good wrap-up there. Appreciate that. And as you're talking about playoffs, Sean reminded me before the show that Scholastic period's ending very soon. Scholastic games are ending up relatively quickly, so it'll be interesting to see. Sean, what are you looking for as most players' Scholastic seasons winds down?
Yeah, I mean, I think really just now that we're in March, one to two weeks left. So obviously with the guys that UNC has committed for Drake Powell, how do they wrap things up, and then just starting to. For those guys, kind of more start to look at their whole season. I think the March, April timeframe for some of the All-Star games, that could also tell a lot once you get all that top talent together and seeing how they're doing, reading the 24/7 staffs of the McDonald's practices, things of that nature, because I think you can tell a lot from those competitions. And then obviously starting to get ready for the transfer portal, which Sherelle, scare me with the March 18th date, because that'll be coming soon. And then obviously this time last year, they were pretty much set from a recruiting perspective versus the 2025 class. So that'll be another thing to dive into for everybody as well.
Yeah, if you guys didn't get a chance to read that, premium subscribers probably already saw Sherelle's really good preview. And it was a kind of an all-encompassing, this is what's going to happen and what we already know. Look at North Carolina's stance and how they're going to approach the transfer portal when it opens in 2 weeks. If you haven't read that, you're probably not a premium subscriber, and I'm judging you a little bit. Let's just be real. We're amongst friends. We're going to be honest. If you're not a premium subscriber, a little bit of side eye cast your way right now. Fellas, before we get out of here, Appreciate the insight on the recruiting side of things, but now it's time to throw some pennies out there. A segment we like to call Our Two Cents, presented by Congruity. We like to call it Our Two Cents because we think about money and we think about, you know, these are the last two things we're going to give you before we wrap the show. But if you look at it from a different angle, Congruity is going to save your small or medium-sized business some money by helping you optimize and become more efficient by taking care of your human resources, your benefits, and a lot of the administrative stuff that is kind of weighing you down as a business owner or a business decision maker. If you'll go to congruityhr.com/Tar Heels, they're going to give you a little form to fill out. It's really easy. Answer some questions. They're going to tell you how they can help save your business some money. If they can't, they'll tell you that too, right? So there's no obligation on your part. Really, all you've done is you've spent a very small amount of time trying to see how you might be able to save some money and make some more profits, you know, increase that top line or even increase the net for your business. Check them out. We appreciate how much they support our work. We want you to support them. They care about the North Carolina business community, and they will take care of you. They're good folks. We would not have them as advertisers if they weren't good folks and if they did not have a product or a service that we believed in, right? Congruityhr.com/Tar Heels. Get your free assessment for your small or medium-sized business. I'm sorry, Congruityhr.com/Tar Heels. Get your small or medium-sized business assessment. Let them tell you how they can save you a little bit of money. Sean, give me your two cents, presented by Congruity.
Two cents. We covered Notre Dame, so we'll jump ahead to the weekend game. Last time Seth Trimble scored in double figures, it was the game at home against Duke. I think he's going to need another strong performance off the bench, just given his athleticism, ability to create, a little havoc defensively. So I think what he produces coming off the bench is going to be really important, especially as that bench has shrunk in terms of minutes played and when Hubert is providing those minutes. And then Armando Bacot, probably his level did not have the greatest of weeks in terms of both the Miami and then 4 of 12 yesterday against NC State. But I think some of the things we did see of continuing to get him in space and let him work a little bit, whether it's a drive and a spin, hard attack left. Obviously, DJ Burns a little slower, so it was easier. But I think continuing to get him in space will be important. I think even going back to the tournament run, he was getting 10 plus shots a game. He was great, but he wasn't dominant. So you don't need a dominant Armando, but you need him engaged, dominant on the offensive boards. And if he can get some, like the left-handed hook where he got good elevation, wasn't taking a very contested shot like that he's been known to do lately. I think, he's going to need another big week this week if he can try to match what he did the first time against Duke, but definitely looking for him and how he's going to finish around the basket this week.
Thank you, sir. I will take those two pennies and use them wisely. Sherrill McMillan, your two cents.
Going right back to Armando Bacot, I still think a first team All ACC is kind of on the line this week. I think PJ Hall and RJ Davis and Flip, whether you think he should be there or not, he's going to be, are pretty much locks for the team. And then it's like, so who are the other guys? For a while there, it looked like it was going to be Reese Beekman. You thought he was a shoe-in, and then Virginia has struggled lately. And then it looked like it was going to be Hunter Salas after that amazing performance against Duke, and he struggled a little bit recently. So the door is still open, I think, for Armando to have two big games and work his way back into that first team All-ACC. And then I would say the second thing, or let's call it 2A, RJ Davis watch. He has 92 threes on the season. Carolina has a minimum of 4 games left. He's 13 away from tying Justin Jackson's single season 3-point record. You would think if North Carolina plays well, they'll play more than 4 games and likely have a chance to break that. I think Justin broke the previous record at the first round of the NCAA tournament. And then the last thing, as Sean said, talking about Duke, that's going to be a tough game, man. Duke has played really, really well, I would say, basically since January 1st, just like Carolina. They only have 3 losses since this calendar year. And even in that game against Wake Forest, that game had, I think, 61 or 62 possessions, and they put up 79 points. So, like, their offense is really, really, really humming. And it's going to take North Carolina's probably best defensive effort of the season to go in there and win. I think they can do it. But again, they have to start with Notre Dame and not let what happened last time kind of build towards the Duke game, as opposed to like having to have a closed door meeting after, you know, a potential loss, you know, like they did against Georgia Tech. So I'm really curious to see what we're talking about next Sunday. We could be talking about, you know, North Carolina has restored order. They've swept Duke. You know, they're finished the season with only three ACC losses. You know, can they be a one seed if they win on Thursday in the ACC tournament? Or we could be talking about, man, they started 9-0 and they only got a share of the conference title. And in the worst case scenario, we could be talking about, wow, they blew two games at home and they're the number two seed. They're dropped to a number two seed in the ACC tournament. Now they've dropped to a three seed in the NCAA tournament. So like, it's just a wide range of things we could be talking about on Sunday. So I'm just kind of anxious to see, to find out what's going to happen.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot on line. Duke has played really well offensively, especially at home. You know, some of their really, and I think they're in the top five or six in offensive efficiency in Ken Pom right now. If you go look at it, I'm not sure where they are in Bartorvik, but they're up there. And, you know, judge how you want to, they shoot the ball really well. I think they're averaging more threes than anybody else in the ACC per game. More made threes, excuse me, than anybody else in the ACC per game. And it's going to take a full team effort from North Carolina, you know, assuming that they also will bring a good effort against Notre Dame in their senior night on Tuesday. Either way, yeah, like Cheryl said, we got a lot to talk about next week. So all of you who have joined us live tonight, we appreciate you being a part of the show. Stick around, and we'll definitely have something coming back for you next week too. But North Carolina Tuesday, home against Notre Dame on senior night. So many guys eligible to be senior starters. I'm not sure how they'll play that out. As soon as we find out, I will tell you that Inside Carolina will report it for you. And then at Duke at 4:00 on Saturday. So, you know, another week chock full of ACC goodness. Last week of the regular season. Holy cow, where did the time go? Pleasure to be here with you guys regardless. Sean Moran, thank you so much. Cheryl McMillan, I appreciate you as well. Shout out to everybody who was here joining us live tonight. And for the folks who are checking us out in their podcast feed, thanks for being here. Remember, rate, review us. We like that kind of stuff. We're grateful for Johnny T-Shirt and Congruity for sponsoring, to John Sigley for producing. Until next time, I'm Joey Powell. This has been the Coast to Coast Podcast here on InsideCarolina.com. Y'all take care.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.